I don't know how often Shakespeare did alliteration. It feels like he did every possible kind of manipulation of the English language. But we're going to talk about Love's Labor Lost. This is one of two plays being offered by Bard in the Barracks this summer. I have with me the Grand Poobah of theater himself, Len Falkenstein. Welcome.
Hello.
We also have Jake Martin, who you may know from numerous projects, in this case, playing co-director. Welcome, Jake.
Hello.
And to the actors I've talked to a number of times, you'll know their faces, you'll know what they're doing. We have Mary Walker.
Hi, nice to be here.
And Alex McAllister.
Hey there. Thanks for having
me. First off, Len, let's talk about Love's Labor Lost, which is remarkably hard to say because of that alliteration. What's this play all about? What are we going to see here? What's the tagline?
Tagline is probably a witty battle of the sexes. That's the very short version, but longer version of things is this is one of Shakespeare's early comedies. It's delightful. It's fast-paced. It's very funny. The basic plot involves the King of Navarre, a kingdom, you know, a sub-kingdom of France, and three of his lords. He persuades them to cloister themselves away for 3 years to study. They're going to, during that period of time, they make vows that they are going to cut down on their food and their sleep, and they're especially not ever going to have any encounters with women. So they somewhat reluctantly, in the case of one of the lords at least anyway, sign this oath. And no sooner do they do that than the princess of France and three of her comely, friends happen to show up at the kingdom on an ambassadorial mission. So you can kind of predict, you know, how the men's vows stand up. So a lot of the play is about the struggle and the comedy that ensues as the men try to maintain, or at least maintain the appearance of having taken and keeping this oath of chastity, even as they are very tempted. And of course, we've got our usual Shakespearean array of subplots and side characters and comic business, in this case involving a visiting knight from Spain, who is fantastical and verbose and egotistical, who is played by Jake, and also a pedantic schoolmaster and her sidekick, a curate, along with, you know, a clown, a dairy maid, and a constable. We've got a play within the play. You can see Shakespeare trying that out for later on in Midsummer Night's Dream. But then the fun thing about our production is that we've put a very modern spin on that. And this is kind of Jake's brainchild. So maybe we should invite him to explain what that is.
All right, Jake, you had to step in as one of the actors, but you're also co-director. What's the brainchild today? What's this all about?
Yeah, well, Len approached me that he was doing Love's Labor's Lost, and we were kind of talking about whether I wanted to be involved in some capacity. And then the more we got talking about it, we're talking about where we want to set it, if we want to kind of do a different little spin on it. And to me, the idea of the men locking themselves away to study really lent itself to it made me think of a lot of bands when they want to work on their next album. Okay, we're gonna go into this remote haunted mansion or something in the outskirts of LA and swear off everything. So we've decided to set the show in 1982, and the men are part of a once very popular and now lagging in popularity prog rock band. Who are very behind on their follow-up album. And so they've decided to swear off women, swear off all the excesses of the touring hedonistic rock star life, and cloister themselves in the cathedral downtown to finish their album. And now they have the women from France who have come here basically to collect on the promised album, which is nowhere near done. So we've kind of layered that in, and 82 was also kind of an interesting time. Emily Bosse is doing the costumes for it, and she's had a lot of fun stuff with that, because when people think 80s, they tend to think, you know, mid to late 80s, the bright flashy. But we've got kind of we're on the cusp of, you know, the 70s going out and the 80s coming in, so we've got a little bit of the slightly outdated, prog rockers who are kind of on the way up, but now the Women are also a band that are maybe a little more new wave, a little more modern coming in. So we've got the battle of the sexes, but then also this kind of changing of the cultural times on top of that. So yeah, there's a lot of fun. We've incorporated a little bit of music into the show as well, it's a lot of fun.
So how, beyond the costumes, which are obviously going to be, you know, telling a story of their own, how do you adapt or change or manipulate the language to fit into this other overlay? Is it a lot of like, cool man, hey, how's it going, dude, kind of additional emphasis or additions? Or is the text straight and just interpreted with a flourish?
The text is still pretty straight. The thing, the great thing with Shakespeare is that because the text is heightened to begin with, there is a certain suspension of disbelief that the audience has right off the bat, because people don't talk like that anymore, or if they even really talk that flowery. So that's already happening when you go to see a Shakespeare show. So really, it's the attitude of the characters and kind of the delivery of the lines that we're able to color that with the theme in the era.
So, Alex, I actually got a little, not exactly a preview, but I saw one of the short reels that you guys had done with the Men of Navarre.
Oh, yeah.
On a bench, more talking about the actors, I think, than the characters. But when you step into a world like this, how do you interpret this? The sort of discontinuity between the Shakespearean language and maybe the bell bottoms you're wearing?
Oh, for sure. Well, as you know, I think Jake used the word hedonistic rock star just describes my day to day so well. I think for me, it came down to having faith in the vision and doing my own research and looking at I'm playing the front man of a rock and roll band. And I genuinely did watch some footage of just sort of leading men in concerts. I think the great thing with this theme and with this script is the themes are so universal that it transposed really well, and it made it a really seamless opportunity and experience for me to transplant this from perhaps a more traditional Middle English setting to a more modern rock and roll. Yeah.
So do you have to sort of take an attitude that would be of the rock and roller while giving these Shakespearean words, or do you feel like it's the same character, just differently dressed?
Yeah. So I think the king, especially the way that I'm playing it, he's rather young and rather immature and rather, I've kind of had a sinking suspicion that maybe the reason why he is locking himself away from 3 years and swearing off women is less about being, you know, this great academic and more about being afraid of getting married. And I think there is something very immature rocker, doesn't want to grow up to that character already, which has worked out, I think, really nicely.
So this is a lighter fare, perhaps, than some of the ones you've done recently. Do you like doing the comedy or the serious? This one's almost a tragic comedy because you've got these characters whose downfall is their own faults, but more comedic, I think, in nature.
You know, I think, because I enjoy doing both. The thing I really love about Shakespeare's text is actually just the verse. And I like a play of his that has a lot of really great poetry, a lot of really great iambic pentameter. And this play is just riddled with a lot of really great verse in it. I think as an actor, I definitely have gotten cast in a lot of comedic roles. But I think yeah, I think what really has drawn me to this text and what drew me when I was during the auditions was the poetry and the writing.
So you're playing a rock band and there's verse. Is there going to be singing of this verse?
You will definitely see the men of Navarre on a clear night when there's not rain, playing some rock and roll. And you'll also see the women of France. You'll see Mary also playing some rock and roll. We added in a little concert at intermission, and it's been a lot of fun to kind of live out that lifestyle. Be a front man for a band for a couple weeks. So it's been fun.
I think that's got to be one of the actor's joys, is you get to be all these different people and try them out. Mary, describe your band, I guess.
So I play the Princess of France in the show, and I come over, yes, on this diplomatic mission sent from my father with all of my girlfriends. So in the universe of our play, my father, who originally is the King of France, in our universe, he's a bit of a music executive. So part of my diplomatic mission is coming there because, you know, we've lent this band, the boys, this money, and so we're expecting them to deliver on their album. So my character as the daughter of a king is, I think, pretty responsible. She's still young, but she's getting all of this new responsibility now, being sent on these sort of diplomatic missions. So I think she takes her job pretty seriously. She's very sassy and not afraid to use her words, but she's very sort of protective of her girlfriends. And I think that really ties well into our 80s theme too, the whole idea of the battle of the sexes, because it was a time when, you know, women were more entering the workforce. They had, you know, shoulder pads and this sort of bigger than life aesthetic going on. They were sort of trying to present themselves as that. And I see that in the princess as well. She has a lot to prove, I think, but she's very, very smart. She's very ambitious. And yeah, I think that just really ties well into a sort of modern up-and-coming new wave girl rock band. They're there to sort of shake things up. And I feel like I get to do that in my character.
So tell me, do you actually have the shoulder pads?
I do indeed. Yes. Yeah. Our very, very talented costume designer, Emily Bosse, who is also playing one of my girlfriends in the show. She made a very, very cute outfit for me. So yeah, there's a lot of really fun costume surprises that you'll see when you see the show.
Having lived through the 80s, I'm not sure if that's the flashback I necessarily want to have, but it is iconic.
I think we pull it off. I feel really cute in my costume.
So Shakespeare's often interpreted, and that's one of the amazing things about it, is just how much you can play with it, either in the space or even in the characters. Mary, when you're playing the Princess of France and you're playing a junior executive, how do you merge those two together? Are you saying, I'm going to be the princess first, and then if the princess was an executive, or do you go about it from the I'm an 80s executive who just happens to be a princess?
It's interesting because I didn't necessarily think of that in rehearsal. I more just sort of looked at my intentions within the scene itself and what I was trying to achieve with those exact words. So it really lends itself to either or. So I do see a lot of parallels in between that sort of position of power, you know, being born into it, but then trying to sort of take on this new responsibility. Yeah, I think there's lots of overlaps, whether you're managing a music executive lifestyle or managing a country as a royal. I think, yeah, there's a lot of internal overlap there.
It's not too often in Shakespeare you also get to potentially perform as a rock band. What was that like for you?
Oh, that was so much fun. So much fun. Yeah. I never really saw myself as a rock star, but I'm getting to definitely live out that fantasy with the show. And yeah, just with the costumes too, as soon as you put them on, we have instruments in hand, we do our promotional photo shoots. It does really come together. And yeah, it's been so, so much fun.
So, Len, when you first thought, I want to do Love's Labor Lost, was this anywhere near what you were thinking was going to look like? I know you've done a number of different adaptations and reskinnings, essentially, of Shakespeare. But how did this one turn out from where you started thinking about it?
Yeah, well, this is my third time with this play. It's one of my favorites. So I definitely wanted to do something different than what I've done before. The last time we did it was kind of a sort of Mad Men inspired early 1960s kind of take on the play that Jake was in way back in 2012, playing Alex's character. Things have turned around. So I was happy for the kind of inspiration, that Jake sort of provided with this, this sort of nucleus for the show. But not that different in certain ways from the way we interpreted Midsummer Night's Dream last time, which was pretty radical, you know, revision. So I'm always up for this, especially when it works. Sometimes you see Shakespeare interpretations where it seems pretty kind of gimmicky, and it's sort of like, okay, let's force this square peg into this round hole. But in the case of this play, while I was maybe a little bit skeptical of the concept at first, the more we got into it, it was like, oh yeah, this actually does cohere quite a bit. I'm really happy with how the show is looking and where we've gotten to with it.
What makes this one of your favorite plays to put on?
I love the language in it. This is a play that's primarily written in rhyming couplets. So you don't get that often in Shakespeare. It's a hallmark of his earlier writing. So it just lends this kind of fun, artificial, but very dynamic sort of style to the text. It takes you into this sort of artificial world. It's very like Molière, you know, who wrote in rhyming couplets. But it just sort of lends an air of comedy at the outset. The plot is simple, but it's very relatable, as Alex says. And it's also got, you know, a couple of the what I think are the best comic scenes in Shakespeare. One that involves a lot of hiding, which is one of my favorite things to do on stage. Because, you know, there's nothing funnier than putting someone large behind an object that is small and making believe that nobody can see them. I think one of, if not the funniest scene in all of Shakespeare in this play. The way in which all the characters are having a lot of fun. Even the men who are, you know, fumbling and failing madly are at least in love. And we can all relate to that, right? So it's high-spirited. Characters are all primarily young in this play, too, which is nice, especially when we're working with the company of actors that we tend to have. So there's a lot to really recommend it, and we've done some neat things with the staging down at the cathedral as well.
Yeah, I like you're very generous because you said the characters are very young, especially working with this cast. But Jake, you were just outed as having played one of the characters 14 years ago. Yeah. Did you have particular advice for Alex going forward, or do you really want to take a different take than you would have taken on this?
I didn't want to impose anything on Alex. It's a very different. I mean, even just by virtue, this is a very ensemble. It's a lot more ensemble oriented than a lot of Shakespeare shows where there's like, here's the character and we're all going to follow his journey. Whereas with this one, we've got the group of the four gentlemen, the group of the four ladies. And so just by virtue of having eight different people in those roles, it was going to be a different energy right off the bat. And so I really did not want, I don't think I think I we barely, just in terms of logistical things, some stuff would come up that we did in previous productions, but I wanted to make sure that Alex was free to take the character where he wanted to. And it's been, honestly, I'm trying to remember a lot of the stuff because it's 14 years ago. So I think it's quite a different take, if I can remember correctly. But yeah, so I was, I guess to answer your question, very much not trying to do anything specific in relation to the way I played it.
Now, you guys have talked about the staging. This is the Christchurch Cathedral area. That's where we're going to be doing this one. What sort of staging is there around that? Do you have a stage built? You did a couple of years ago, you had one there built as well. Is it something like that, or are you using more organic or ground level staging?
Hmm. Yeah, we're doing a very, you know, low key version of the promenade style shows that we often do in Odell. So we do move the audience between six different spots. Spots are all on the grounds of the cathedral, so the moves are very short. But we are using some of the architecture of the building, some of the, you know, the vegetation that's there, and just sort of the natural beauty of the environment. It's a play that is kind of set largely in a park, so it's nice to use the natural environment that's there. There is also a stage, like we had last year for Merry Wives of Windsor, but we only use that for the final scene, for the play that's the play within the play, which, you know, naturally enough takes place on a stage. So I think it works well. I think it's also a nice treat for the audience to be like, okay, where are we going next? How are we going to use this location in a different way? And it particularly lends itself well to the scene I alluded to a few moments ago. Yeah.
Well, and you know, Fredericton has a great reputation for playing a lot of great rock bands around the city. So I am very curious how many people will wander by having no idea it's Shakespeare, seeing another rock band playing. So we have a little bit of a sneak preview. We have a scene that we might hear between Mary and Alex. Len, do you want to set this up?
Sure. This is pretty simple to set up. This is right near the start of the play. The men have made their vow, and the women have just arrived. And so this is the first encounter between Alex's character, the King of Navarre, and Mary's character, the Princess of France.
All right. Take it away, you guys. The stage is yours.
Fair Princess, welcome to the court of Navarre.
Fair, I give you back again, and welcome. I have not yet. The roof of this court is too high to be yours, and welcome to the wide fields too base to be mine.
You shall be welcome, madam, to my court.
I will be welcome then. Conduct me thither.
Hear me, dear lady. I have sworn an oath.
Our lady help my lord. He'll be forsworn.
Not by my life, fair madam, by my will.
Why, will shall break it. Will and nothing else.
Your ladyship is ignorant, but it is.
Were my lord so, his ignorance were wise. Were now his knowledge must prove ignorance. I hear your grace hath sworn out housekeeping. 'Tis deadly sin to keep that oath, my lord, and sin to break it. But pardon me, I am too set and bold. To teach a teacher ill beseemeth me. Vouchsafe to read the purpose of my coming, and suddenly resolve me in my suit.
Madam, I will if suddenly I may. Madam, your father here doth intimate the payment of 100,000 crowns being but the one half of an entire sum dispersed by my father in his wars. Say that he, or we as neither have, received that sum, yet there still remains unpaid and another 100,000 more in surety of the which Aquitaine is bound to us, though not valued at the money's worth. Then if the king, your father, will restore but that one half, which is unsatisfied, we will give up right in Aquitaine and hold fair friendship with your father. But that, it seems, he little purposeth. So, fair princess, were his requests so far, not so far from reason's yielding. Your own fair self would make a yielding gainst some reason in my breast and go well satisfied to France again.
You do the king, my father, too much wrong, and wrong the reputation of your name, in so unseeming to confess receipt of that which hath so faithfully been paid.
I do protest, I never heard of it. If you prove it, I'll repay it back, or yield up Aquitaine.
We arrest your word. But yet, you can produce acquittances for such a sum from special officers of Charles, his father.
It shall suffice me. At which interview, all liberal reason I will yield unto. At meantime, receive such welcome at my hand, as honor, without breach of honor, may make tender to thy true worthiness. You may not come within my gates, fair princess, but here, without, you shall be so received as to deem yourself lodged in my heart, though denied fair harbor in my house. Tomorrow will we meet again.
Sweet health and fair desires consort your grace.
Thy own wish, wish I thee in every place.
Oh,
you can see the sparks flying there, right?
Yes. Oh, Mary, I don't want to cross you in any fashion whatsoever. The fair princess is fairly scared. Yes. This is going to be fun, though. It's one of those things, too, like it's Shakespearean language can be a challenge in the beginning. I always say, like, the first half of the first act, I'm just trying to learn the language. But the emotion is so strong, the reactions are so good, it carries the tale, even if you're not quite getting every word. And it's going to be fantastic. It's been a joy to see. I've seen all of you in different versions of different Shakespearean plays, and it is always an honor to see because you carry it so well. Len, when does this show open for preview, and when is it in full go?
Well, our collective dates with our other show, Winter's Tale, are June 18th to July 5th. Love's Labor's Lost has our first preview this Saturday, the 20th. And thereafter, we're running every Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday up through July the 5th. We're at 7:30 nightly down by Christchurch Cathedral.
That sounds great. Well, everybody, take a look for it. Even if you just happen to be wandering by and you hear this Shakespearean rock band, which I think now really should be a thing, keep an eye out for the gorgeous stash that Jake is sporting. I don't know if that was something that all of the crew or all of the cast would try to aim for, but certainly keep an eye out for it. My guests have been Jake Martin, co-director, and apparently also on stage with this tomfoolery. We have Len Falkenstein, Grand Poobah Theater and director as well, Mary Walker playing the Princess of France, and Alex McAllister playing the Prince of Navarre. Look for it and have some fun. Barthebarracks.ca for more details. Thanks a lot, guys, for joining me today.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.